State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy is here on a Tacky Talk Wednesday, Tacky.
Yeah, middle of the week, Wednesday. We've been really rotating the days around here. We can't seem to find a theme for a day with me.
It's okay. We like to keep folks guessing, myself included. I never know what's going on day to day.
Oddly enough, scheduling is still a little bit tricky in August. A lot of the meetings that I was supposed to do throughout the month of June kept getting pushed around into July. Circumstances in June made it very difficult. So I am making up for lost time. Hopefully, as I close in on the second half of this month more, I will have less meetings and focus on some more stuff I need to get around the house done. Those who've gone through the process of leaving loved ones realize that this process on legal matters as well does take a better part of a year.
No, for sure. And you're a lawyer. Imagine folks who aren't.
Yeah, I don't do a lot of probate work. I do know enough to know what's going on. I do have friends helping me on this on the legal side, but it is some preparation issues did not occur properly with my mother. Actually, I was telling mom to do certain things and she didn't do them. So there's only so much one can do. But at the same time, though, it's just a reality of it, as well as figuring out this next part of doing things. And like everyone else, I need to get into my yard. This humidity in particular, despite the temperature coming down, it's just really hard to breathe and just get through the wetness of it all. So I'm hoping we get some clear days and I can get maybe 4 consecutive days off where I'm not checking email, hopefully, or less check email of 4 days. But at the same time, though, we're running a poll. I got a poll with the committee. Due on Friday, we're sending a bill to study order regarding electronic device notifications of electronic radioactive health. It's a weird kind of sort of thing. It is what it sounds like. Radiation will kill you from electronic device notification. That is not ready to do. We don't have time to research it in the period we're given. And the session is essentially closed and formal session, so no action will be happening on controversial matters. So I actually been chasing committee members for votes by text messages when we opened up on Monday. So for those who question about working through the summer, my staff and I continue to work through the summer on administrative issues. You may not think it's that important, but from our standpoint, under the House rules, I do have to get these administrative stuff done as a committee chair.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I know, it won't be long before October 1st rolls around and we'll have a better sense for how the federal budget's going to impact us.
Yeah, I'm actually waiting with a lot of fear and dread. We've talked about this many, many times now here about the looming October 1 deadline and political consequences. I've been watching primary elections around the country. As you know, I'm a junkie and I follow some better than others. And there is a distinct battle in both political parties. You have the so-called MAGA split up among themselves, given the current president's inability to follow through on his commitments on certain things. You do have the more what we call conventional or moderate Republican Party, as well as the more liberal side of it. Doesn't exist, by the way, the smaller wing of the party where it's a little bit not Democrat, but they're less moderate, more liberal, so to speak. And there is a battle at the state legislative level, which the more news coverage is covering. The news outlets have paid attention to the importance of those down ticket races, including county seats. On the flip side, the Democrats are facing an equal challenge, as you've seen. You have the so-called Democratic Socialists, which I find fascinating as a politics major, that this is not what I understand socialism is, but that's a longer conversation for a different day. But you also have just plain old, far left wing, which has been around for a long time, and you have the much more moderate. And of course, you do have more conservative moderates, Democratic Party as well. And we are watching a few races here, particularly the Cambridge area, the Somerville area, where there's a lot more activity on the left side of the party, so to speak. And nationally, it's the same thing happening. Certain states have definitely, by close margins, actually, elected either a moderate or a more liberal or progressive Democrat in races. And they haven't been exactly. Blowouts. A lot of them have been nail-biters in both political parties at the state legislative level. So, our primary day is September 1. And again, we remind folks that mail-in ballots, early voting, and going to city hall is available, as well as voting on September 1st itself. And I'm hearing a little bit that preliminarily it seems to be tracking similarly regarding early voting as it has the past several years.
Just talked to the city clerk earlier today. She tells me they have sent out over 7,000 mail-in ballots, and they've got back over 5,000. So that's a very popular option.
Extremely popular option, despite, to be frank with you, a very small portion of the population against mail-in ballots. The reality is the participation rate shows that it outweighs the portion of the population that thinks this is a bad idea. It seems a little lower than the last few times in my mind, but it's still fairly consistent. And 7,000 ballots taken out in the situation where they're probably looking at maybe around 15,000 to 20,000 voters coming out, I think, is Nikki's probably saying somewhere in
Yeah,
that
she's
range.
predicting about 20-25% turnout.
Yeah, so that puts it closer to 20,000 to 25,000 range total around the city. So, to about 20,000 there. So yeah, no, that's actually very good early voting, 7,000 or potential 20,000.
Yes, very much so. And then, there's early voting that starts this coming Saturday, runs all next week, and then, as you say, the in-person voting on the first September 1st as well.
And remind folks, even if you're not affiliated with a political party, any political party, you're considered unenrolled, put them as a U in the voter book, you can participate in a primary election on September 1. You will not be forced into a political party as a result of your participation. That had ended a long time ago. At one time, that was true. If you took a Democrat, or Republican ballot, you would have been put in that political party by participating in a primary. That is not the case. You retain your unenrolled status. So if you wish to vote early or vote for a candidate in the primary, it doesn't matter political party you choose, we do encourage you to do so. As unenrolled, you're free to retain your unenrolled status.
That's right. Yeah, all you have to do is tell the clerk at the polls which ballot you want.
Yeah, so we shouldn't, again, not this, we want to encourage people to vote regardless of who you're voting for. You don't have to vote for me. I just want you to go vote. So, definitely do participate. We've created so many ways to reduce barriers and create more ease, especially in early September 1 voting period where I'm sure many people are planning to file applications.
Right. Yep. So, and the clerk tells me also this year they have electronic devices that will translate into 88 different languages. So it should be accessible for all.
And the ballot is also in Chinese. We're one of three communities now. Malden, Boston, and Quincy have it translated in Chinese. So it is the second dominant language here that crossed the 5% barrier.
Yep, absolutely, absolutely. So much stuff has already happened. August Moon was a big hit.
Yeah, it was actually one of the most beautiful days of August Moon. It wasn't wet, it wasn't humid. The sun was very strong. It was indeed very hot. It was guzzling water like you've never seen. It was we handed out 2,200 plus fans and 1,000 jar openers and probably almost like 500 plus tacky little magnifiers were a big hit and about 800 ice pops to folks. It was great to see the city councilors and the state delegation and county folks and candidates throughout the event. We actually talked a bit early on, that we're living in very different political times where some of the people were not having manners, will be polite about it, didn't occur this time. I have had situations where people were in my face while I remained as calm as possible, hoping nothing more happens. That didn't happen this time out, which was great. And people came up with some really good questions and all just want to talk about stuff, so to speak. Doesn't have to be politics or work, but just talk about a few things, including my own family life. And it was good to see a lot of old friends. And well, some of the good questions asked is, for example, about the so-called audit that the state auditor wants, which the Supreme Court kind of punted, saying she couldn't really do it, but kind of can, but only if we say so. And I would like to remind folks that we voted under the House rules twice, actually, because we had to vote for the rules two different times. To give the auditor the ability to choose our auditor, and we pay for the auditor through an RFP process. the House and the Senate both do an RFP process currently for a financial audit of both branches, of which the financial audit's available online, which is not very exciting to look at, but they're there. And she has chosen not to participate on doing RFP. And the reason we like to have an RFP independent audit because that's how the practice is. And you'll follow federal accepted government audit guidelines for government agencies, which is the same standard the auditor is required to use in the state statute. So that issue, as I like to say, has been pushed back onto the auditor to take the initiative, which has been provided by the House. And if she chooses not to, we would follow through on RFPing or on auditor, like we normally do, not me personally, but the business office would issue an RFP and do the financial audits at the end of the fiscal cycles. So that was one of the questions that came up. Some people asked about ballot questions, of which, as we talked about, there's too many of them.
There's nine,
It was very difficult to have conversation with ballot questions because there's so many.
Yes.
And then you had some very generic questions, which I get every so often, of like who you are, you know, where you're from, so-called what you stand for, which I always tell folks, well, what do you care about? Because I like to hear what you got to say more than what I got to say. Also just give a little bit of explanation about, you know, what is the state legislator's role. The federal government has sucked the air out of the room in the news by all the things that's going on down there. And of course, municipal government's been very busy, as QATV's been covering every council meeting. But you know, at our level, while you do show our sessions and our public hearings, and I'm with you as well as Senator Keenan and Bruce Ayers at different times at QATV, as well as being in the Quincy Sun, the Ledger, and social media, you know, I continue, you know, every year I find myself helping explain how state government matters in their lives.
And I know that you also welcome students, public school students, to the State House all the time to have them learn more about it.
Yeah, we have intern every summer. We generally encourage freshmen and juniors, well, actually college students more than high school seniors, but we've been able to take high school seniors every so often, but generally we encourage college students for the summer intern program. And while I cannot take 10 interns, we've tried it and it's not a smart move. You do have this whole state delegation to choose from to try to get an internship. If we can't help you, try to help you find somewhere else in the state house if possible. And you get like four speakers a week that are not all elected officials, but also folks that work in government or with government in the private and not-for-profit sector. And we very much encourage folks to reach out during the winter period as we do our own interview process, like any other job, to see what interns make sense for our office. And during the school year, we also get folks needing special projects for school. So we will sometimes get a research intern during different semesters to complete one of their projects in college. And we sometimes get lawyers too, people in law school. Not lawyers, but people in law school that also need to do projects. So, yeah, there's plenty of educational experience that we're trying to help with, for people to get their credits.
Yeah, speaking of the ballot questions, there was a results of a poll that came out today, actually, UMass Amherst. I think Channel 5 collaborated on this poll. And among the respondents, only two of the nine questions would not pass right now, I guess. The first one would get rid of legal recreational marijuana. And then the second one would not allow collective bargaining among public defenders, which kind of surprised me.
Yeah, well, I think the polling's gonna be very challenged depending on how you do it, because you try to poll nine questions at one time. That's gonna be very difficult for any a person answering a poll. I think some of these organizations will not have enough money to poll their specific questions, and the questions are very confusing in the sense of a yes vote repeals or a no vote is remain. It's a
That's
little
right.
peculiar. So we'll go in more into this on our show later on as we try to help you guys and help me too, I suspect.
And me,
Try to explain what your yes and no me vote means, because I'm
yeah, I
saying
think
yes.
after the primary we'll look at that,
Yeah, because a yes vote could mean repeal, or a yes vote mean not repeal.
That's
It
right.
really is the framing of the question, which is
Yeah.
very confusing and reinforces my displeasure about ballot questions.
Yes. Once that red booklet comes out from the Secretary of State, we'll have a better opportunity to talk about those.
So, if I remember correctly, the Council of Public Services, whatever, the contracted public defenders is trying to
Yep.
unionize. And I believe that is a yes, is to unionize them.
That's correct.
And explaining that collective bargaining issue in public on a public forum in like 2 minutes is not easy,
Yeah.
because there's a bit of a story and people don't fully understand what that agency does because you name the agency, I don't think people know what it is.
I agree. I think you're right. That's why I said public defenders, because I think that's more relatable.
More related, although technically public defenders is it's a little bit tricky with the contractors, right?
Okay.
So I think that's part of the reason why that ballot question right now can be complicated because people need to understand exactly what is seeking unionization. The marijuana issue, as we know, over the course of 18 years, prior to the legalization of medicinal marijuana, which is about 10 years now, actually,
That's right, yeah.
since that vote for legalization of recreational marijuana, as I can't speak for the folks, but all three prior questions on decriminalization, medical marijuana, and recreational marijuana won actually pretty overwhelmingly in this state, much to my surprise, personally.
Yeah, and in this in Quincy as well, it passed, yeah.
Yeah, in this city, it did really well in
Yes.
legalization. And is a yes vote to repeal?
I think that's right. I think that's the question is, do you want to repeal the law that legalized recreational marijuana? Yes or no?
Yeah, and I think it should continue to follow the trend of the previous three votes, even though
Right.
it's 10 years since the last one. We've talked multiple times already about my thoughts about the process of regulatory businesses, including marijuana, and when it reaches a certain critical mass, and how we consume things and the interesting ways we are influenced on what we consume. But I have a hard time seeing voters repealing this.
Yeah, I think you're right, just given its support and popularity. Now it's an industry now.
Yeah, that's curious. Some of the other ones I think are no vote is to keep the current law too. So we got to go through these questions again that that I think are going to be very confusing, and I think polling is going to be very difficult if you're trying to poll 9 questions at one time.
Yeah,
So.
no, I think you're right. Yeah. Maybe what we could do is do a show on, two questions a piece or something like that.
Yeah, let's do that. We're going to have
Yeah.
to do a little homework before to start that show. So we actually
Like
have to
likewise,
what
yeah.
the yes and no is talking
Yeah,
about. Try to give you a for and against a view, at least my understanding of the for and against.
right.
You may be surprised to hear that we are not lobbied on ballot questions once the ballot questions move on to the ballot.
Oh, it doesn't surprise me because you have no say at that point.
That's right. So normally we would get multiple fact sheets or briefings from folks on both sides trying to lobby us to take a position. And I think I've spent many times and do not always agree with a position, but I do appreciate people sharing that position, providing me information so I can at least understand the different points of view. The trouble with ballot questions is that now I'm kind of relying on just looking at it myself, like yourself.
That's right.
And any other, as you've seen, institutional knowledge that I may have regarding a certain policy and try to integrate that institutional knowledge and trying to help understand what's going on here, but also try to figure out what potentially could happen.
Right. Yeah, no, it actually removes it from the legislative process and puts it into the hands of the electorate, after which legislators like you have to implement it somehow.
Yeah, and unintended consequences. I won't say always occur, but sometimes do occur. And the legislature is now in charge of taking action on those unintended consequences.
Right, exactly. Yep. Speaking of marijuana, is there a bill pending to legalize cannabis cafes or public consumption?
Cannabis Cafe is actually under the category of the Cannabis Commission.
Okay.
So we last year they had a move forward in regulations setting up a cannabis consumption cafes in public areas. And then we blew up the entire agency
That's right. That's right. I
And
remember now. I remember now. Yes.
you may have followed, I don't know how people are listening or follow newspaper, a series of Boston Globe articles detailing the absolute chaos and non-functionality of its prior version and inability to create accountability. So we did pass into law a consolidation of the agency under the governor, which provides singular accountability and includes the fact that the inspector general had been in there and noticed a lot of discrepancies, including uncashed checks. So,
Ooh.
there was a lot of administrative problems and regulatory issues. So, as I said a year ago or so, I can't understand why would you be implementing regulations when your agency may not exist and you're under siege by the inspector general to figure out what's wrong with you folks. And they did find a lot wrong. So,
Okay. So it's a part of the executive branch now.
part of the executive branch will see what the current commission, as they're actually cleaning up their house as we speak, will do on things like cannabis cafes, whether they're going to get try to continue to push forward that regulation or they're going to peel it back. And of course, there's a local component because you still need to get your local licensing and you have to meet local health codes and things like that. Personally, I don't like the smell of it and I don't partake of it. People may want to enjoy doing that, but it's not an environment I personally would enjoy being in.
Right. Also, talk a little bit about the legislation that deals with ADUs, tacky accessory dwelling units. I know that the governor is touting this as one way to tackle affordable housing issues.
There's an odd question number seven that kind of touches on that a bit. I got to look at the fact sheet again. Someone sent a friend of mine sent me a fact sheet, so I got to take a look at it again. We had passed into as part of the housing bond bill last legislative cycle to try to accelerate local ADU alternative dwelling units for property owners, particularly single family property owners. And it's faced a lot of local resistance because of the fact you're basically building what we normally call an in-law apartment. That's what most of us will probably understand what they are. And the fear, of course, is short-term rentals, right? The Airbnb problems that you're really building it for Airbnbs. We in the housing bond bill last legislative cycle, we didn't ban them. But we also required a much more streamlined process so homeowners get a quicker answer on whether or not they're permitted to build one or not. And
Right.
be a lot more to current code. Question number seven, I have to look at a little more because it does affect single family home property rights on certain size lots to be able to do alternative dwelling units on their property. And this has become increasingly popular, particularly the high cost of housing. And perhaps you have parents that are elderly that you don't want to have close by, but they want to have their own independent space from you. Or inversely, you may have an adult child that you want to have close by and willing to contribute to the household, but you don't want them in your house because it's not big enough or you downsize. You want to build a smaller single unit room, but it's basically an independent small apartment. It's been very controversial in very much all communities about building these units. And while the legislature didn't ban them, nor did we encourage it by right, we did want a better process where property owners could get a faster answer on a yes or a no.
Right, that's been one of the obstacles that I've heard is it's very cumbersome to go through the process.
Yeah, and it's really terrible because it is a major investment on architect design, engineering. You sometimes have to go to Conservation Commission. You have to check the zoning. You have to check, whether or not you have enough setbacks. And then you have some plumbing, electricity involved, as well as perhaps internet extension. So it is
And
not
that's
just.
all before a shovel goes in the ground.
This is exactly it. So there is already a cost incurred by the property owner who wants to do these type of projects. So the quicker a municipality can get them an answer, the quicker they can save some money on whether they're going to do something or not. The legislature's position is that we don't want to take municipal rights away, but we do think that property owners should know sooner or later they're going to get a yes or a no. And I think that that makes sense because of the cost incurred. So while I do appreciate people's opposition to projects, be mindful that, the person seeking a project has already made some level of financial investments. And that person that made the financial investments, need to know whether they're going to continue a cut bait, in a reasonable amount of time.
Right, exactly. Cut their losses or move forward, right? One or the other, yeah.
Exactly. So, question 7 is going to be one of the ones we're going to be looking at a little more, but that is one of the questions that addresses this issue.
Yes. I'll be curious to see if we've already started to see, at least here in Quincy, some former commercial property being converted into residential property. I'd be curious to see if that trend continues.
Yeah, we talk about this in Boston quite a bit too. It's actually not cheap to convert a commercial to a residential property because you would have to reconfigure the entire heating, cooling, plumbing, electrical system to be per unit with its own circuit breaker boxes, its own plumbing system, and its own HAV system and individual metering. People think it's something you just kind of like go in gut and just that's it. It really isn't. You have to gut, including, let's say, the floor's bathroom, completely remove the whole thing. And then redo the entire thing per unit, which can be not cheap to do. And you probably want a little bit of soundproofing, I guess, if you want to have residential. So I suspect that certain size commercial makes some sense if you're looking at a smaller facility and you can sell each condo or get rental that will make every difference price, within X number of years for you to recoup your costs. Makes some sense. But when you're dealing with like, the 14 story buildings, it could be very cost prohibitive.
Yeah, well, I mean, in some cases, they've done the calculations. It's cheaper to tear them down and start new.
Yeah. Ironically, if you do have an unused apartment complex and you want to convert that to commercial, somewhat easier.
Ah, interesting. Well, it makes sense though, if you think about it, because it's already kind of set up for individual offices.
Yeah, there's already a bathroom and everything else, and you can always remove the kitchen if your municipality considers a kitchen to become residential. You just remove the kitchen, but it's not required, and the kitchen could be just used for an office use. If particularly, you got, let's say, a large suite, a very pricey, let's say you got a very pricey piece of Boston property where you have this unused large suite, could be used for a decent size small business.
Yeah, right. Just take out the stove, and then it's not a kitchen anymore.
Yeah, exactly. So, I've not seen which buildings in Quincy has converted to residential from commercial. I have been watching, particularly in my own neighborhood in Walston, the building out of the of behind the 7-Eleven, and my understanding is that once that done, they're going to go across the street to the old New York Market, Eastern Bank location. There used to be a CVS. There used to be another market in the past. And in Walston, the housing authority is going to be building a another building behind the old Friendly's, which I believe is South Shore Bank now, to continue building affordable housing. And I heard that the potential building next to 91 Clay Street in the old CVS parking lot, that's basically a flood every time it rains in that little bowl, they've suspended that project for now as they're trying to figure out how to deal with that water.
I know that they were talking about putting some kind of a pumping station in to deal with that.
And probably have to be on pylons. So
That'll
I
take a
think,
little more time and planning, I'm sure.
the engineering is much more difficult, I think, than at first. Once they started putting like some borings in and just check the groundwater and how far it is to bedrock, I think they started realizing the engineering challenge here. I'm not saying it won't happen. I'm just saying there's some engineering issues.
Yeah, well, I mean, we know the old Wallston T station flooded all the time, so it's definitely an issue in that area.
Oh, absolutely. People don't realize that the redesign and reconstruction of the entire Wallston T station includes a small retention area underneath it, as well as dedicated pumps to keep that station dry. And actually, the more it moves water through Wallston Hill into the Wallston Center area, the harder it pushes, the more it pushes back out the other side into Wallston Beach. All those drains go to Wallston Beach. So it's all gravity driven. So the more Wallston Station can just shove water down, in a steady rate. Gravity should just take over from that point and just push water back up on the underneath Hancock and just keep on moving. That was the last station to become handicap accessible, and the last one to actually have a properly functioning elevator. The constant flooding in that first level made it impossible to have an elevator consistently, and the escalators were a mess. So, it took a long time for that to be done. And I remember the constituents being very unhappy with inaccessibility to the station. But the reality is a complete tear down and rebuild took half the time it would if it kept it open, and it was considerably safer. And the Yankee, I believe it was the Yankee Bus Line, provided the buses, and they came with Wi-Fi, air conditioning. I was told by some folks they missed the buses.
Yes, it was an all-out effort to try and keep riders going.
Yeah, they don't miss start and stop on the buses, but they do miss amenities.
Right, yeah. That's if we could incorporate those on the trains, it'd be all set.
Well, a train ride in the future is actually pretty curious. I don't actually have an answer on something this old on a line. But again, I give Phil Ng a lot of credit. And I, again, reemphasize to the governor not to make him transportation secretary. We implore her to just keep him at the MBTA to continue a very hard decision-making, but try to get the line a greater reliability and more sturdiness into the future. A line this old is always going to have maintenance problems. And
It's
it
60 years, just this past week, celebrated 60 years. 60 years for the Red Line.
for the red line. So, and it's over 120 for the whole system,
Right.
particularly the green line. So, the reality is as they continue its system upgrades, it's about long-term maintenance schedule. And that's what they're trying to set up now, is that as time goes along, they can go through rotation on sadly shutting it down for short periods again down the
Right.
road for maintenance to keep reliability up. So I suspect this would be even past, hopefully, cross my fingers, past filling, that they will keep up a regular maintenance schedule, which co will cause you some inconvenience, but it will prevent it from having long-term shutdowns and potential derailment and other types of accidents.
Right. I mean, eventually they're probably going to have to do the same thing at the Quincy Center Station.
Yeah, the Quincy Center Station is still a conversation. The city is the master planner, and Quincy is the only municipality that controls the air rights over the MBTA, thanks to Mayor McIntyre. So, for any type of vertical construction on any part of the MBTA line, requires city approval, and hence the city is the master planner for Quincy Center T. Now, there is some interest on trying to bring back a garage. Other question is that do they want to do any type of commercial project on top of it? Since the Quincy Courthouse is going to be redeveloped on its current site, that no longer needed to put a courthouse over the train station, which was actually
Right.
part of a
Yeah, I know there
conversation.
was talk of a justice center over there, but that's not happening now.
It does not happen now either. And to do a project type, as you guys can imagine, is that you can't disrupt the train line, nor you could put the train tracks, nor the passengers, nor the trains in any kind of danger.
Right.
So the logistics on that type of project would be quite intense and quite expensive to do, just architect and engineering. And you also need tenants before you even begin, because you got to be able to pay for this project. And if it becomes a public project, the bonding would have to be enormous. And whose bonds are going to be on? State. The city, or an adult, they can get the federal government to want to participate.
Right.
So it is a continuing to be a real question mark. It seems that the current post, actually, especially after post-COVID, the current parking facilities seem to be maybe sufficient. I say that maybe because it depends what we're talking about. If we're talking about like Labor Day weekend, it probably is okay.
Right.
Versus a heavy traffic period during like the springtime when people are trying to get to work. It's
Yep.
it used to be, as remember pre-COVID, didn't matter the time of day, all the parking lots were filled up very quickly before 7 a.m. So
Oh, yes.
this
Yep.
post-COVID partially remote world really has changed ridership as well as parking lot usage. So it's hard for me to say, oh yeah, be there by 7 a.m. or sooner, otherwise you can't get a space. I can't say that with confidence.
Right. Yeah. I think that's why the water transportation is taking more of a key role, at least here in Quincy.
Yeah, Senator Keenan and Rep Ayers have been working very hard at the shuttle service, and it's continued to The pilot's actually looking like it's going to be a regular project, and the state budget continues to provide some subsidy funding specifically for Squanor Point Park. And obviously the parking is very high over there. There's plenty of spaces,
It's huge, yeah.
and the pier is still usable. It's actually in pretty good shape. So continuation of the route, Hingham, Quincy, Winthrop, Lynn, and the airport, is very beneficial. You do have to check the schedule, and it is not directly to a terminal. You do have to take a bus once you arrive at the airport. I've been told it's actually, depending on what flight you are, actually is much more convenient.
Yeah, absolutely. So and if they could develop a bus route to Squanor Point Park, that would be helpful also.
Yeah, it's really about the size of the ridership. If efficient ridership, obviously the MBTA would be interested in doing so. The need for MBTA cost efficiency, does result in some bus line reductions or further spacing between pickup and drop-off points of passengers in the bus line. This has been going on actually throughout my entire time in the State House, on them constantly reevaluating the ridership, and thanks to electronic tracking and Charlie cards and other technology, including obviously monitoring the buses themselves on time it takes to get from point A to point B, the goal is to try and encourage that as much as possible.
When does the legislature go back in formal session, Tacky?
Formal session actually starts on swearing in day, which is in January,
Oh,
which
okay.
first Wednesday after the first Monday of the new year,
Okay.
which is going to be very late, actually. It's going to be one of those later Januaries. So January 1st is actually on a Friday, New Year's Day is a Friday,
Oh, okay. All right.
which means that swearing in day will be January 6th,
Oh, interesting. Okay.
which is pretty deep, actually, when you think about it.
Yeah, it's almost a full week into the new year. Okay.
Yeah, so we got a pretty long period, and I don't lie to folks. August is a very quiet month. You might move a bill here quietly. September, I don't expect to see a lot of action. But once we get after October 1st, going into the end of the year, there'll be a greater push, including myself, to try to get some bills done in informal sessions.
Sure.
Not just uniquely me, everybody's going to be pushing.
Right. I know we normally talk about world politics, economy, but we don't have time today,
Well,
unfortunately.
as I've just said, it's not too busy on state politics. We can always talk about some campaigns going around us. And
Oh, there's the U.S. Senate campaign, of course, we haven't touched on.
I saw my news feed on my little son saying that a UMass poll has Ed Markey up by 30 points right now.
30 points. Wow.
Yeah, whether or not that holds, I'm actually very surprised. I don't think 30 points is, I think 30 points is a little aggressive.
Seems very high. Yeah,
It's
okay.
very high. That is too high. I'd be
Yeah.
very surprised. I wouldn't do prediction market that
That's right.
one. It'll actually be interesting. Prediction market's going to be very busy right now. Doing,
Oh, you're right. Yes.
I don't encourage it whatsoever.
No.
That is part of the reality right now. So yeah, well, we can talk about world events. We talk about some as we close in election day. We could probably do a post-election day show if we have the timing for it.
Yeah, for sure.
And just to share some what I think is going on. I did watch, did attend actually the Steve Lynch and the Patrick Roth debate in Weymouth last week.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah, so I did enjoy that. I had not been in a live debate in a long time, as an observer. And I encourage people if they can do so. It's actually a good experience. And kudos to the League of Women Voters, who did a very good job with the questions and a very
Oh,
good job
good.
on moderating. They did a
Good,
very
good,
good job.
good.
I was very impressed.
Yeah, that's coming down to kind of a generational race, if you will. Yeah.
In some ways,
Yeah.
the debate's worth watching because you can see there's very two distinct styles and two different distinct messaging.
That's what a debate's for, right? Yeah, good.
Yeah, it's very, very two different approaches to the debate.
Yeah.
And we could talk about debate prep on a different day. But no, again, there's plenty of information on YouTube and obviously the websites. We can't talk about my personal campaign. This is a nonpartisan show,
Right.
but I mean, obviously I'm participating a little bit on the sidelines of a few races myself, which we can't discuss here.
Right.
and we'll see how it plays out. So in the meantime, the office is open. The staff had been texting me while on the show.
Funny, my staff's been texting me too. I guess we both have to get going.
Yeah, I got the whole call me before. I need to talk to you
Okay.
before this or that today. So, room 42 at the State House. It is summertime. I do always encourage, particularly now, to visit the State House and take a State House tour. If I'm floating around, I like to do tacky tours too, but it's a lot longer than the State House tour. Warning you now. 617-722-2370, 617-722-2370. Please feel free to call the office with any concerns, especially a constituent concern. I am getting actually quite a bit of constituent mail right now regarding day-to-day issues they're having in their lives. State Representative Tacky Chan Facebook, you can see some of me sweating it out at August Moon Festival if you want. As well as the Instagram page that corresponds with it. We have MELegislature.gov. Informal sessions are recorded, even if they're very short sessions, they are. So you can still observe us in informal sessions. And we're getting notices now, public hearings going off in September. So there is some activity going on in the State House starting next month, which you can watch at MELegislature.gov. TackyChan.org is our resource page and a contact page in addition to my email. I do get both of them directly to my State House email, so you can feel reaching me either way. And then, what did I miss? I always miss something. Someone's going to tell me I missed something. We did State Bill with Mark Crosby last week. That's on QATV as well as a number of different other stations. Mark updates us on what communities have downloaded that news feed. And of course, here we are, Joe, every week or 2 weeks, depending on our scheduling. And do email Joe, please, at qatv@qatv.org, qatv@qatv.org. Actually, I did have someone I met at the Germantown Housing Authority, the Quincy Housing Authority's 80th anniversary party, who actually is from Tobin Towers, who actually do listen and watch to our show. I was very happy to get a little bit of feedback. And if anyone, that watches, has a question or suggestion, definitely please email Joe at qatv@qatv.org.
Absolutely. Love to hear from folks. And thank you to that person. We appreciate that very much. Good to talk to you as always, Tacky. Have a great week.
You too.